I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's a delightful, slightly overcast Monday morning here in West London. Jules, we have mega show here. Yeah. We have mega quick hits coming up. We're going to have a discussion about United with Mark Ogden and the newcomers coming in. We got Cristiano Ronaldo's perfect hat trick. We got Karim Benzema's injury time winner. We've got Robert Lewandowski hitting the woodwork four times. Yes. Unbelievable. So much stuff to get into. But let's start with the North London Derby. And let's start, actually, with what happened before kickoff. Mm. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang left out for disciplinary reasons.
Yeah.
Arteta wouldn't say what they were, but funnily enough, it got into the media. Nobody disputes it. So when that happens, normally the club tells people on background what it is, which is that he might have been late to a meeting, perhaps even more than one meeting.
Yeah.
Is this as big a call as we make it out to be, right? Because, like, it's basic alpha male stuff. When you go out there and you want to show your dominance over a group, you go to the biggest, baddest, most powerful dude. When he misbehaves and you say, oh, if he's got the, you know, if he lays down the law with him, then he'll lay down the law with everybody. Is this what Arteta did?
The rules is for everyone. It's not just one rule for Aubameyang and other rules for the other players. And I think if your players in that dressing room and you see your captain, especially arriving late at a team meeting, even especially before a big game like this, you should expect a sanction. And I think that's what happened. He was supposed to start. He thought he was starting, and that was the plan. But because of that, he got on the bench. There's a case of making, well, drop him completely then. Don't leave him on the bench, which you can hear. But I thought it was good. The issue I have is that if it happened already before,
why not do it before?
Voila. Yeah, exactly.
I think there's several moving parts to this. Yeah. I think it also could be said it's easier to drop him now when he's not the dominant player that he was. Because you say, everybody's treated the same. We know Diego Maradona didn't get treated the same. We know Lionel Messi doesn't get treated the same.
But
if Aubameyang was the Aubameyang of last season, and he was hot, and Arsenal were in the midst of competing for something important rather than being 10th in the table, maybe you would have gone down a different route. I mean, I think it's what's critical is the manager always does what's best for the team, right?
You would think so.
Moving on to what happened on the pitch, this was one-sided dominance. Really? I mean,
I've rarely seen a North London derby so one-sided. There's been a few, and Spurs have been
for 75 minutes, 80 minutes or so.
It was just one team on the pitch. It was incredible. And where I'm disappointed in Jose Mourinho, it's not the setup, because this is your best team. You play your best team in one of the biggest games of the season, no problem. It's the lack of reaction. From the first minute, you could tell that Spurs were not in it at all. So you've got Gareth Bale against Kieran Tierney, who is one of the most attacking left-back in the country right now, one of the best left-backs in the Premier League right now, Kieran Tierney. And do you really expect Gareth Bale to just follow him everywhere? Because that's what you should be doing.
I have slightly less of an issue with that, in the sense that if you're going to set up more attacking, right? Because Bale was on a great run.
No, this is the team to play, for sure.
If you set up more attacking so that Tierney plays on his back foot, then it's okay to have Bale out there not tracking him, because Tierney's going to be defending more. But when you don't do that and you still expect Bale to track back, that's when you run into issues. Now, Mourinho, to be fair to Mourinho, he came out and he said after the game, look, we were terrible in the first half. In the second half, the referee was terrible. And so he was obviously referring to the contentious incidents, not so much Coco Lamela's sending off, but the penalty.
He also said that some players were hiding. So again, it's not his fault. It's never his fault. It's not about his game plan. It's not about his tactics. Right. It's not about
the
not
players
seeing
he picked
all
were
the
hiding.
Runs. Yeah.
Just checking on that.
Does
he have a point on the penalty?
Yeah, 100%.
Don't think that was a penalty?
I think it's a really, really, really harsh penalty. There is definitely contact after Lacazette misses his volley or just hardly touches the ball. But it's similar to Longley on Icardi. It's those that there's contact in the box, and now you give them. Pretty much every time there's a contact in the box, you give it. Regardless of where the ball is, regardless of what you've done before, if you could score or if you can't score. This is what happened now.
What struck me was, you know, the whole noisy, I hate VAR brigade, right?
Yeah.
This was a call the referee made on the pitch, right?
Yeah.
And yet they want VAR to intervene and overrule him.
Yeah.
which totally runs counter to the whole purpose, right? Yeah. You can't have it both ways if you're
assistant.
The VAR brigade,
he says
right?
in the word, it's to assist you.
So it's to assist you. If he says, I saw it clearly, I don't need to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Then that's fine. I don't really have an issue with that. I want referees to be able to officiate. I like VAR. I'm pro VAR. I have no compunction about saying it. I think there's serious issues in the Premier League, but I think that has to do with the people and how it's implemented and the reaction of some media. And it's obviously not perfect. But regardless of this, this didn't swing the game. Because apart from that moment of genius from Eric Lamela, which he's done before. I'd love for him to do it again. But
not like this. Not in a game like this. Gab, this is someone who was on the bench, who just come on who hardly touched the ball before. And this moment of genius, for me, is goal of the season. And I had the argument with one of my sons this morning. He said, like, really? Do you think it's goal of the season? Yeah. One, because you never see them scored. Overhead kicks are amazing. But now and again, you see one.
You
and
do if
great.
You watch Lamela play.
But do you see what I mean?
I take your point.
To make it as a nutmeg as well on party and just the creativity, the awareness, the genius, is fantastic.
And obviously at the end, Harry Kane had a chance to snatch it, but no question, Arsenal fully deserved the better team.
They deserved. They played so well. They had a proper game plan. Yeah. And again, I think it's disappointing from Spurs.
We're going to get into that more for our podcast listeners, but no question, I think a huge morale boost for Arsenal. All right, podcast listeners, you're still with us. Now, I struggle a tiny bit with this because Spurs managed one shot on goal, and it was the crazy Lamela shot. Where, by the way, you're right, in flagging up, he also nutmegged Thomas Partey, who... I don't know. Maybe I don't get it. I don't think he's the Thomas Partey we saw before. Not just because he got
knocked.
To give me critical Mourinho, but I think we should also praise Arsenal here.
Yeah.
Because they dominated the midfield. Emile Smith Rowe, I thought, was tremendous.
Fantastic.
Out wide. Odegaard got a lot of praise. A good player. But for me, it was about Emile Smith Rowe. On a day when I thought Saka was actually quiet, as well.
Mm.
I thought it was the midfield, and I thought it was Emile Smith Rowe and Tierney's runs, and also Cedric as well. Let's give some love
Cedric,
to him.
Cedric, yeah, but the thing about Smith Rowe, and we're going to go again on Mourinho there, because I don't understand how, as a manager of a club like this, as a manager like Jose Mourinho, you can let that happen, because for the first half, it was just open doors on the left-hand side for Arsenal. Bale and Doherty. But it's not just so much Bale and Doherty against Tierney.
It's the two of them together.
It's them two, and then Ndombele being the defensive midfielder on that side, because he's the one who should be covering the runs of Smith Rowe if Doherty has pushed on Tierney, because Bale was not really defending. But Smith Rowe kept making those runs in the half space, in behind, and there was no defending, they were not doing anything. And I'm just like, come on.
His other right back is Aurier. Obviously, Doherty is a wing back and is not a good one-on-one defender, right? But then again, it's not like Aurier is some kind of defensive specialist either.
No.
Right back.
I'm wondering. Play Sissoko with Aurier.
I was going to say, is this a situation, or even why not Sissoko at right back?
Yeah, but I think
I like Ndombele further up the pitch, whatever. But if you feel like you need him in midfield, why not the Sissoko at right back?
But because I think it was more a case, not so much who was the right back. It was much a question of, okay, this is just about sliding your block, you know, and your block like switching, and who's covering who, what runs. Because it was too easy for Arsenal that first half on that left-hand side. Far too easy. Because there was... And Ndombele would never be Højbjerg in the sense that he can cover his fullbacks. And I think that's what's missing. And it was so obvious to see, and yet Mourinho kept saying, wake up, wake up. Well, he kept swearing, you know, this and that. Wake up, wake up. What are you doing? And I'm like, oh, do something. Instead of just telling them, because Smith Rowe had an incredible first half, but because there was far too much freedom on him.
If you were really cynical, you would almost conclude that Mourinho left Bale out there so long so that, like, aha, see what he does? Now I don't have to play him again. I don't believe that. I think
Bale was really frustrated to come off as well. Really frustrated.
He didn't have, you know, he looked like he was on a good run and he had a poor game. I think also Son going off, I think that affected him.
Yeah. That
screws everything up. Right?
But how can Harry Kane has not even a touch in the box until the 80th minute or something like that? No shot on target, nothing. And this is something we've addressed before. Do you remember? In the way you prepare a game and you're attacking options.
I think I can answer that. Remember early in the year we praised Harry Kane that he was a 9 and a 10 at the same time, and he dropped deeper, he picked up the ball, he passed. He can drop deeper when he's got guys running past him into space.
Yeah.
But when you have Bale, who's having a terrible game, when you have Son, who goes off, who's not there, Lamela has a different skill set. I mean, maybe Lucas Moura could have been the one to add that depth when Kane drops off.
Yeah.
But it simply didn't happen. I need to say something because remember, and I shouldn't have to spell this out. I feel like I'm being Captain Obvious here, right? But remember when Mourinho made his point about, look, we scored 100 goals this year.
It's only us and Bayern Munich.
Yeah, so, you know, like, and people say I'm defensive. Okay, a couple things. All right, first of all, there's no merit in being an attacking team. It doesn't make you a good team. What makes you a good team is playing good football, executing well, and getting good results. Hmm. That is the benchmark. You could score 500 goals. It doesn't matter. You can still be a rubbish team.
Yeah.
It's number one. Number two, simply scoring a lot of goals doesn't make you an attacking team. It simply means you've scored a lot of goals. Those are two different things. It's not that difficult to understand. Thirdly, the benchmark, if you really want to use goals as a benchmark, is compare apples with apples. Spurs had scored, at the time, had scored the fifth most goals in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And that's not, doesn't mean that they don't score many goals. It means that they score probably the right amount relative to their wage bill, fifth or sixth in the Premier League, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, the reason they got to 100 goals is that they played some absolutely abject team. They went on long cup runs in the Europa League and in domestic cups. They played some ridiculously bad teams. They put like seven behind Maccabi Haifa. They played more games than anybody else.
Yeah.
So how do we go and just buy into, like, I don't blame Mourinho for saying this. He did the right thing in saying it because it's factually correct. And you're going to get a whole bunch of Muppets out there who are going to be like, aha, look, it's the media's agenda against Mourinho. Mourinho's actually super tacky. He doesn't become.
No, I mean, if you've got Son, Kane, Bale in your team, you expect them to score a lot of goals anyway, right?
Yeah, especially Son and Kane. But yeah, if you play more games, I expect you to score more goals. More games.
Yeah, and I mean, no one can tell me right now that the patterns of plays offensively from Spurs this season have been fantastic. No one can tell me that, you know, there's players in half spaces. There's something in place that plays the other team out of the pitch or off the pitch or whatever, you know, because they're so good at little intricate play, small passes, this and that. This is not what has happened. They scored a lot of goals on the counter thanks to the genius of Kane and Son, not because of what they've been working on or putting some really special tactics in place offensively.
I think Mourinho has done some very good things since he's been at the club. So this is not
enough. But before this game, they had won five in a row. They were playing well. But I don't know what happened in this game, but it was very surprising.
Both these teams are in the Europa League. Mm-hmm. Both these teams, I think, have a chance to win the Europa League.
Yeah.
I think whoever wins the tie between Milan and Manchester United are in with a chance.
Yeah.
Beyond that, though, I see Villarreal. I see
Roma were great.
Roma,
but then at the weekend you watch them, it's just not the same team.
But if United get knocked out by Milan, with all their injuries or whatever, which of these two teams do you think? I mean, do either Spurs or Arsenal become the favorites for the Europa League?
I think maybe slightly.
And is it more Spurs?
Maybe slightly, because of Mourinho, because this is a cup competition, because he's got all that experience.
But he's got individual match winners.
Yeah, but you cannot make those mistakes again of, like, you know, taking 80 minutes to get into a game of that caliber. This is not possible.
And that would amount to a successful season. Like, that, I guess what I'm driving at is, if he wins the Europa League and comes close and finishes outside the top four, is this still forward progress under Mourinho?
I think so, because there's been some improvement. We've said it all along. They had a big dip in form when Kane got injured and they really struggled. But there's been a lot of positive stuff. But you need, for my liking, he hasn't improved enough offensively. That's where I would be critical of Mourinho, is that I haven't seen enough with the players that he has. This should be better football.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, this is enough. North London, we're in West London, close to Surrey, so it's only logical that we talk about Manchester United, who, of course, beat West Ham 1-0. They stay second. I thought Mason Greenwood was great. We're going to discuss that a little bit more in depth on our podcast, listeners, because I don't want to pass up this opportunity. We've got Mark Ogden with us, United making some big appointments last week. You and I talked about it a little bit, but we need his expertise to sift through it. Darren Fletcher is your new technical director. John Murta is your new football director, not director of football, directors, we've been told. Matt Judge, who's not Mike Judge, the creator of The Simpsons, and not Alan Judge, the small winger who upset the referee. Matt Judge now does something with contracts, I think is what he did before. I want to understand this. So, Mark, first and foremost, you told me, you might have even reported, going back 18 months, 2 years, that United were looking for a director of football and that John Murta was in the running for it. Why did it take so long for them to make a decision?
It first came up in the September after a particularly disastrous transfer window when Jose Mourinho was in charge, and we were told that Ed wanted a director of football, having not wanted one for 6 years. And basically, they've been pushing it around the plate for 2.5 years. And I think it's designed to, take the heat off Ed Woodward. So in the summer when the transfers happen, if they go badly, they've got somebody they can point the finger of blame to. And if they go well, will Ed claim the credit for appointing a director of football? We shall wait and see.
All I care about, Mark, to be fair, is because this was long due. We've been saying for a long time they should do it, blah, blah, blah. Is John Murta competent? Is this what he does? Because you could have tried and get Monchi or Edwin van der Sar, people who actually have a great track record as a sporting director, director of football, football director, whatever you want to call it.
Sorry, on Edwin van der Sar, I'm assuming he's not responsible for registering his club's record signings for the
European League. No, he's not.
Just checking.
He's not, but thank you for the reminder. So that's what I want to know, and I'm sure United fans just want to know. It's great if the guy is competent, but if the guy is just there because he'd been there a long time, they were not sure what to do, or he wanted to leave, so they wanted to keep him, and say, hey, what about this? This is the whole thing, because if you appoint someone who's useless at it, there's no point.
And crucially, if it's all the same people, will they have any more power? Like, does Murta now have more power than before, or will it still all be done by committee?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think John has got more power than before. In terms of his competence, before being at United, he worked at Everton, fully worked. The Premier League took him to the Premier League to set up their elite performance group. He did well at Fulham. So he's, within the game, he's respected, but whether he's actually, this is his forte, we'll have to wait and see. I'm not sure he's a guy that has had much dealings with the big agents before, whether he can pick up a phone to Mino Raiola, to Jorge Mendes. We have to wait and see. Now, I was told right at the beginning of this process, when United were talking about getting a director of football, technical director, the high calibre candidates they were looking at outside the club would have wanted direct access to the Glazers. If they're a director of football, they want to go to the people who signed the checks. But there was a roadblock in the form of Ed Woodward, and even still I'm told that Ed Woodward is the final say. John Murta reports to Ed Woodward, who reports to the Glazers. So, you know, for me, you know, John Murta and Darren Fletcher are good people, they're good football people, they're very competent, but I do feel that unless they're allowed to do the jobs independently, it will all end up back at Ed Woodward's desk. And as we've seen in the past, that hasn't been successful.
Well, it depends on your viewpoint, because, of course, United making reporting their 6 month league profits, making £33 million profit during the pandemic.
What pandemic? What pandemic?
What pandemic? We're going to get into this a lot more in our podcast, get more granular. Hit upon some other things, like the fact that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is up for a new deal. But, Mark, you're telling us this isn't that big a deal, right? Because he only had a year left. I mean, of course they're going to extend him.
Look, he's got a year left, and I think, you know, progress has been made in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that they're a better team, that the club is in the right direction. But I think you have to question whether it's clearly evolution rather than revolution at United, whether the progress is quick enough and where it's going to head to. They're the questions that we have to answer. But right now, Solskjaer, you couldn't not give him a contract with a year to go.
We're going to talk about this more, because obviously with Solskjaer, either you sack him and bring somebody else in, or you extend him. I think it's pretty much standard practice at this stage. But we're going to talk, speaking of all the money United can make, we're going to talk about Avram Glazer selling selling his selling 70 million pounds worth of his shares. So that's not too bad. And Ed Woodward reported Ed Woodward selling his house in Knutsford, which I'm assuming is someplace near Manchester. But he'll still be very much involved, although supposedly he's going to move his primary residence back to Surrey. So podcast listeners, you'll get all that. All right, podcast listeners, you're still with us. I just want to better understand as we try to put Merton Fletcher in context, because I want to understand what is really changing here. And I appreciate, Mark, it might be hard to predict, but prior to this, I was led to believe that when they looked at a player, there was something almost like the old Liverpool transfer committee.
Yeah.
You had a bunch of people with a voice. Murta, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Fletcher, your friend Matt Judge, Ed Woodward, of course, Mike Phelan, perhaps Nicky Butt, maybe even Michael Carrick.
Maybe as well. Some of the scouts.
You've also got Jim Lawler, the Fergie's old scout, he's still there. Marcel Bout, who was Van Gaal's coach, he's there as a European scout. So there are a lot of voices on this committee. It's a big committee.
Okay, Fergie's not in on it though, right?
No, he's not there.
Okay, so is it still the committee, but now Murta's voice and maybe Darren Fletcher's voice is going to be louder? Or is it more of a top-down structure where Murta and maybe Darren Fletcher, you know, are going to talk to Ole and say, all right, we want this and that. This is doable. This is not doable. These are the funds. And then ultimately, the buck is going to stop with Murta and Fletcher, obviously pending Ed Woodward's approval. Is it going to work like that? I mean, to me, that seems more rational if that's how they do it.
No, I still think the committee's in place. I still think the voice of Phelan and Solskjaer and, you know, whoever else is the manager in going forward will have a voice. And, you know, Solskjaer will say, I want this player, and they'll get that player. You know, last summer it's been well reported that Ole didn't get any of his major targets, and the players that did arrive were either last-minute signings or players that were devised by other eyes. So we'll wait and see. I mean, I'm not convinced by it at all, to be honest. I think that it does feel like it's just moving desks around in the office and giving a couple of people titles which don't actually have any greater responsibility. But like I say, it all depends on Fletcher and Murta being given the chance to do the job. You know, Darren Fletcher, as we all know, is a very popular guy. He's well respected, but I don't quite know what his credentials are to be technical director of Man United.
I'm curious about this. I just want to go back on this, what you said about Solskjaer didn't get his major targets. Did he have a major target at centre forward?
Well, he wanted Erling Haaland. He wanted Jadon Sancho. I mean, that's no secret.
Okay, but Jadon Sancho's not a centre forward, and Erling Haaland moved in January. I'm talking like in the summer, right? So somebody like Cavani, and this is what always gets me. This is why I think the old style system they had in England, where the manager has a final say and makes these decisions, is fundamentally flawed. Because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, obviously a football man, but presumably he spends his time looking after his own players. I don't expect Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to go and watch 80 hours of Y Scout to figure out how Edinson Cavani is doing, not least because he's been injured all this time. So, I mean, that's got to be somebody else's job, right? Did you see what I'm saying?
Donny van de Beek wasn't one of Solskjaer's targets, and he's been signed and he's not played because Solskjaer hasn't really picked him. So that tells you that it doesn't actually work if you get people signed. The manager has to play a big part in the process. And I'm just not quite sure it actually works at United right now, or it hasn't done. They'll tell you how it's working great and it's much better than it used to be. But we haven't really seen the proof of that. When they signed Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Woodward was telling everybody, well, we looked at 804 right-backs and we came to a guy that, you know, with a ball at his feet, isn't particularly very good. So who are the other 803 right-backs? It was almost like saying that having all these names in the system was a good thing. And that shows you that the committee is a bad thing, because surely if you need a right back, you don't need to go in the system to look at 804 right backs when professional football people would say, well, there's two or three good players in France or in Germany, let's go for them. So there's too much information at times and the committee's too big. So hopefully, from United's perspective, John Murta and Darren Fletcher will reduce that a lot and make it a much more streamlined operation. But having dealt with United a lot over the last 8 years post-Ferguson, streamline is it a word that you use to describe them? It's very complicated, it's very complex. They do take a lot of time to get things done. I'm told the paperwork trail at the club is huge. To get something signed off takes forever. So hopefully this will change that. But the reality is, you know, we keep hearing this. United will say time and time again, or Ed Woodward will say time and time again, cultural reboot, things are getting better, we're turning this tanker around. It's been 8 years now. It's been 8 years since he took charge. And there's still in a transitional process.
We've talked before about the frustration from United fans on those players that they keep missing. Why it took so long to sign Bruno Fernandes? Why they didn't get Haaland? Why didn't get Gabriel? Why didn't get Reguilón? Why didn't get Jadon Sancho? We did it a lot last summer.
Yeah.
Is John Murtough going to change that? So let's say they say, okay, now we want to sign. Let's think about someone, you know, realistic that United could go for.
Camavinga,
for example. You know, this is what we were talking earlier. Is this new setup, if it's really a new setup, will enable United to actually be on top of things again, like they used to be before? No, now, like, because, you know, is John Motta going to say, well, for Jadon Sancho, it's 120 million or it's nothing. There's no point playing hard balls because we're not going to get him.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there is a best practice at play here, right? The best practice is to cite the Camavinga example. By the way, before people go and rip this off, we're not suggesting that they're going to sign Camavinga, okay? But I'm just using it as a placeholder. It'll look very good. Is the scouts do their job. Murta does his job. He says, oh, Camavinga is really good. We really like him. Do you like him, Darren? Yes, I like him a lot. Okay, let's get him. If Ole agrees, you talk to Ole. Ole's like, oh, yeah, I like him. Oh, maybe I like somebody else. But sure, Camavinga is obviously an upgrade over what I have. And then you go to Judge and Woodward, and you say, how much can we afford to pay for him? This much. And then you give Judge a limit. And Judge dialogues with Murta and says, okay, well, I can push it this far, but then that means we won't be able to sign this guy. Are you okay with that? Yes, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then you do the deal.
Yeah.
That is the way it should happen.
But that's the way he hasn't happened for United in the last 5 years.
Yeah, but Gab, you've already mentioned too many people in that process. You look at Man City and Chiqui Baguristain knows exactly how much they can spend, who they need, what they need. And it's much more, he might have to speak to Ferran Soriano, maybe Pep. He doesn't have to speak to seven or eight different. You've mentioned.
You
six
say
or
he might have
there.
To speak to Pep occasionally. Yeah, I with all due respect for
and
Chiqui.
And Khaldun, I think at some point Khaldun also says, "Yeah, okay, let's go and and spend 100 million on."
But no, but you're right. I mean, look, there's different ways of doing this. If United have had a collaborative approach in the past, you know, you don't want to necessarily throw out the baby with the bathwater. But you know, you are looking for an upgrade, and I think the only way is if somebody else can go and take responsibility.
Yeah.
Because look, there's no question, moving on to Ed Woodward, there's no question that if I was a Glazer, I would love Ed Woodward. I'd have a little Ed Woodward screensaver on my computer. I'd make him the background on my phone because this guy's making me an absolute ton of money. I don't know how they managed to make £33 million when they have the biggest stadium in the Premier League and it's been empty for the past year.
That's true. But on the other hand, Manchester United should be the club who can sign whoever they want because of who they are, because of the money that they have. This should not happen, missing targets. You know, oh, we wanted to sign him, but then we missed out on him. This should not happen for Manchester United. It can happen for a club like Arsenal or like Spurs, but not Manchester United, which shows you again that it happened because the wrong people were in the wrong positions, or that the people who were in those positions had no idea how to deal with those transfers. Because there's no way United should not get a target. It's impossible.
Well, I was told that Solskjaer wanted Upamecano last summer when his transfer clause was still in play. And for whatever reason, he was overruled, or the club decided they didn't need Upamecano, who would have been, what, I think it was about £45, £50 million.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, you know, he would have made them better. So, how was that not a good deal? Why was that not a good deal financially for that? He's a young player, long term, resale. But that is what I don't understand. And I don't know how this changes things.
Okay,
because ultimately, as we've said before, the ultimate sign off is Ed Woodward to the Glazers. It's Joe Glazer, Ed Woodward. That remains the case, no matter who is director of football or football director, technical director. It still stops at Ed Woodward and Joe Glazer.
Okay, on Upamecano, for all we know, maybe it was Murta and Fletcher and Butt and Phelan and the rest of these guys who thought, no, let's put our
ready.
More face
in
it.
Yeah.
No,
let's stick with Lindelof.
You mentioned Glazer, 70 million. I'm super impressed. This has been a long-running thing with United. It's a story that's been running for so long that people have kind of forgotten about it, is the fact that the Glazers have taken an enormous amount of money out of this club.
Yeah.
They would say we've also made it perpetually profitable. But that stinking feeling, that sinking feeling, whereby this club hasn't been as successful on the pitch as it should have been since Sir Alex left, in part because you don't just chuck all the money on the playing squad, but you take a whole bunch out for yourself, that feeling remains. I want to ask you, it's there when the team does badly. When the team does well, are there United fans who say, well, maybe the Glazers aren't so bad? I mean, has the anti-Glazer sentiment, does it kind of wax and wane with results?
It does. It does wax and wane. And it reached its peak when United were actually quite good under Sir Alex, you know, the green and gold campaign back in 2010. But it's...
David Beckham with the green and gold. No, obligatory Beckham reference. David Beckham with the green and gold.
Yeah, sure.
We know how it's Beckham hard, feels about billionaires getting involved in football.
Yeah. I think a lot of fans are just a bit of just downbeat with it. I don't think they feel it can change. I think, you know, the £70 million that I think Avi Glazer is going to raise from this, it's not going to go back into the club. The club made that clear that he's not selling the shares to the rest of the team. He's selling the Well, is it his money, though? Because they bought the club by borrowing money and they're taking money out of the club all the time. So the club is almost like a cash machine for the Glazers and they're drawing down on it. But I think, you know, let's be honest. Since Sir Alex left, they've spent a lot of money. They've wasted a lot of money. They haven't spent it wisely. But I think, you know, Jules will probably see this more than I, because of his role at the weekend at games. Old Trafford has been left to decay under the Glazers. The ground itself needs updating. It's looking old.
I thought about that on Thursday when I was there, Augie. I promise you, I went to the UFO office, which is like under one of the stands, and I thought, like, you know, just a bit of painting there and there would be really good for this stadium. I mean, it's leaking sometimes from the top.
Yeah, I mean, there was a classic case about 18 months ago. I was at a Manchester derby and there was a massive gap between United and City on the pitch and in terms of the table. And the main stand roof was leaking, and it was a metaphor for United under the Glazers. The main stand roof at Old Trafford was leaking all over the director's box. But the point I'm trying to make is that since the Glazers have been at the club, Liverpool have spent heavily on the ground. Tottenham have got a new ground. Arsenal have got a fantastic new ground. Man City are in a new ground now. There's only Chelsea that haven't really spent money on the ground for different reasons. And you can't say that Roman Abramovich doesn't put money into the club.
Okay,
so they're trying.
The Glazers,
at least they're trying. Haven't...
Maybe I'm going to be dark and cynical. I'll be like you for a minute. If the Glazers were to spend $100 million on the ground to refurbish the ground, you know that would just translate into more luxury boxes and jacking up the prices because they'd want to need a return. The reason clubs spend money on football grounds isn't because, we want our fans to be comfortable and have a lovely ground. It's because we can charge them more, right? Is this what you want?
You've got to do both. You've got to do both. You've got to make sure that, like you said, you've got to fix the roof every now and again. I mean, it's funny you mention that because we had a chat with Ed Woodward a few years ago and he talked about the United spent time in Santa Clara on the summer tour. They played a game at the Levi's Stadium where the 49ers play. And United were taken aback by and that's because they had, I think it was like 6 or 7 stacked rows of executive boxes, maybe 120 exec boxes. And the idea was that if United do redevelop the main stand, it would be a case of, rather than take it to a 90,000 seat stadium, they would take it up to maybe 80,000 seats and then maybe another 20,000 boxes. But those boxes would bring in 10, 20, 30 times more money than the seats. So the idea would be that you bring in more through the commercial revenue to pay for players in the pitch. That is the PR spin. The reality would be, well, if you spend £100 million on the ground and you're bringing that money back to the commercial side and the executive boxes, it's just more for the Glazers to pay because they don't seem to be paying down the debt. The debt is now, £450 million? It's grown. Obviously, it's a pandemic, but the Glazer family aren't putting money into Man United to make them better. They're putting themselves in charge of Man United to make the family richer. It's simple as that. They haven't invested a penny in Man United. They're taking it out. And this football club, which is the most successful cash-generating football club in the world, is basically there to service the owners who take money every year through dividends, through, you know, through whatever. It is an ATM machine for the Glazer family.
Jules, should we just quit this, walk away, get a bank to lend us $500 million and go and buy a profitable football club? The problem is there aren't very many clubs out there that are already profitable.
Not right now,
That's the
problem. That was a good idea.
We were slow on the draw up with United. Augie, I think we're all in agreement on social. I don't think there's much to talk about it. You know, for all the criticism, they're second in the table. You know, they beat West Ham. And again, you can say, all right, well, it wasn't super impressive. I thought Greenwood played really well. I thought there were positives. Let's not forget, they're taking the pitch without Pogba, without Martial, without Cavani. You know, at some point, what do you expect? So it's only right that he gets a contract extension, given he's got a year left, right? This is not the time to go and change managers. Would you agree with that? I mean, that's my view. Do you agree with that, Augie?
Yeah, look, I mean, he's made progress. He's made the team better. He's got rid of some of the high earners. The better in the table, the second in the table. So progress is there. I think we said before, it's evolution rather than revolution. I don't see any dynamism there. I do wonder what if he's going to get a 3-year contract, what the plan for the next 3 years is, where they're going to go. I don't see where Solskjaer is taking this team. He has to find a way to play that doesn't just rely on defending and hitting teams on the counter-attack. So for me, they need three players with the same characteristics and determination as Bruno Fernandes all over the pitch. They need a better spirit. And the problem with Solskjaer is, you know, teams reflect the personality of the manager. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is... What is he? I don't know. I mean,
okay,
he was a player that was happy.
No. It's not that. If you can get Julian Nagelsmann next season,
you would. Yeah. No. Look.
No. I'm just saying that they're trying or they want to. I'm just saying, don't tell me there's not better managers right now for Manchester United than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
I think that is the heart of the dilemma, though, Augie, isn't it? Like, at this stage, you either say, "All right, look, he's been great, he's done the job," but long term, you know, we're improving too slowly, right? And so we're going to aggressively pursue a different manager and say goodbye to Ole. Or if you keep him, you have to extend him, right?
Do you know what concerns me from a Man United point of view is that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, as a player, was happy to spend the vast majority of his career at Man United on the bench. He wouldn't challenge Felix Ferguson to play more often. He was happy to accept being a bit part player. He wasn't a guy that wanted to be on the pitch or pushed to be on the pitch. So that his characteristic is not to challenge authority. It's basically to take what he's got. So is he just a good manager for the Glazers and Ed Woodward, that Ollie's okay, he'll make us a bit better, he won't push us, he won't criticise us, he's a club man, and we'll just drift along, because United are just drifting along. They're second in the table, but they haven't won a trophy for 4 years. Are they going to win a trophy this season? Depends on Man City, I guess, doesn't it? They're drifting along, and will they still be... Is there any sign that under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer they'll stop drifting in the next 3 years, or will they just continue to drift and bobble along? That is for me, the concern. He's not a dynamic manager that will drag this team to the title. I just don't see it.
He would rather play a walk-on part in the war than a lead role in the cage. There, made my Pink Floyd reference.
Pink Floyd
reference.
But he lost 4 semi-finals in a row. If they're out of the Champions League, it's because he messed up that game against PSG when they were by far the better team. He left Fred on the pitch. Fred got sent off, which we all knew was coming if he was staying on the pitch. And they lost the game that eventually caused them a qualification. I'm just saying, okay, yeah, he's a nice guy. He's a United legend or whatever. He knows the club so well. Everything you want. There is a little progress. I give you that. The away form is fantastic. They do some good things at times. They won the derby against City last weekend, or 8 days ago, 9 days ago. I'm just not sure how much it shows your ambition. And then we go back to what Mark just said, and maybe the ambition is that. That's the ambition.
Maybe that is the ambition, because I think it can be upgraded. There are better managers out there.
Definitely.
There's better young managers out there. But once you've made this decision, you have to extend them, right? Once you've decided the conditions aren't right to go for Nagelsmann or somebody else we might like, we're not ready to take this step, for whatever reason.
Yeah, of course. You
then
keep him.
You stick with
him.
Yeah. All right. Augie, thanks so much.
See you guys.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, that's more than enough, United. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
A Lautaro Martinez wonder goal helps Inter to a 2-1 win over Torino to keep them top. Jules, Lautaro says that despite the club's financial difficulties, he's confident he'll get a new deal to his contract that expires in 2023. Are you as confident?
I would like to be, because I think him and Lukaku are making such an amazing partnership. But the thing is, the club needs money. And who are their most valuable asset? One of them is certainly Lautaro. And it might be a case of, let's wait and see how we come back on the other side of the pandemic and all of that. It might not be all doom and gloom for his new contract, but...
23 years old, yeah, I think he's on the block.
Yeah, he is indeed. A heavily depleted Milan side fall to Napoli 1-0 at home. Gab, they're 9 points back now. With 11 games to go, 9 points behind Inter, is this over for the title?
It's going to need a major screw up. Look, Milan played on Thursday night away from home in the Europa League. They come back, everybody's out. I don't think Milan played badly, but I think Napoli deserved the win. Theo Hernandez dispute for a penalty. I don't think simply because there's contact, it's a penalty. I don't think it is. So,
I agree with you.
You know, I don't think that really moves the needle. Pep Guardiola continues to play stars on heavy rotation as they win 3-0 at Fulham. Jules are chasing quadruple. This is quite a luxury. It's a luxury that Guardiola has earned.
Yeah, but it's incredible when you look at the bench on Saturday night with Gundogan and De Bruyne and Mahrez and Sterling and Foden and all of that, and you're like, wow, okay. Okay, it's a different ball game. It's such a different team.
It's going to make such a difference to them during the stretch.
Incredible.
Run,
and
tired.
That quadruple, you know, is very much on course because of that depth of squad that they have. Incredible.
Yeah, but City don't like it when we mention
so let's not mention it. Keep it going. Sergio Aguero converted a penalty in that game against Fulham. Incredibly, this was his first Premier League goal in 14 months, Gab. He's out of contract in the summer, as we know, and Catalan media say that he's already agreed to join Barcelona as a free transfer. Do you think it's a good idea?
You know, I think it's all about his fitness. I don't think his form has declined. You know, I went back in the first half of last season, 2019-20 season, he was averaging nearly a goal a game. It's like 21 goals in 23 games, which is pretty remarkable. If he's fit, if there's no congenital issue, yeah, he turns 33 on June 2nd, but you know what? He can still get the job done. So in that sense, yeah. On the other hand, it's got to be the right contract. Barcelona cannot afford to tie themselves in some negative.
And Laporta says it's not to the detriment of a top striker like Erling Haaland. He would come a bit like the Henrik Larsson.
Yeah, I wish you wouldn't say this nonsense because you're not going to sign Haaland.
I know, but I'm just saying. He doesn't have to come and be your number one and play 50 games a season. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but then don't pay him like that.
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo answers his critics by scoring a perfect hat-trick, left foot, right foot header in Juventus' 3-1 win over Cagliari. George, this was a game in which he could have been sent off too.
Yeah, and he was listening. We saw his goal celebration after all the critics from the Porto game, but it's an orange. He got a yellow card for a high foot on the Cagliari goalkeeper, which could easily have been a red, right?
Yeah. He felt really bad. He was immediately apologetic. I think he realized straight
away
as a
professional.
And
also, the keeper just got up straight away. I think if the keeper rolls over and sort of pretend a bit that he's in shock or in pain, I think it could be a red.
Alessio Carragno, one of the good guys.
Yeah, one of the guys indeed. Also, plenty of speculation around Cristiano, although both him and Flavio Paratici saying that he's going to stay and he will be at Juventus next season. In Madrid, the papers are talking about a comeback, but are we sticking to the scenario that he will come back, but to another of his previous club?
Look, my scenario is
My
scenario is he stays. I think that's the most likely situation. I think it would be mad for Juve to put him on the block. He's making the young players around him better, just leading by example. Equally, I don't think Juve are in a rush to offer him a new contract. I think they need to see how things shake out. Now, if he does move, and this applies for now or in the summer, it's going to be because A, he wants to move, and B, I genuinely think, unless we've learned nothing from the financial crisis and the pandemic, there's only one evident choice where he can maintain the same level of wages and whatever. And that is Manchester United. Do United want him? Does your pal John Murcia want him? I have no idea.
First signing, Cristiano Ronaldo back.
And there's a number 7 shirt waiting for him. But again, before people get carried away, a lot of things have to go. First and foremost, he's got to want this.
Yeah.
Speaking of Real Madrid, your boy Karim Benzema gets it done in injury time as they beat Elche 2-1. But Jules, this is hard work again.
Again, that was hard. I mean, they drew with Elche before, earlier in the season, around Christmas.
And did it come from behind? 1-1.
And they had to come from behind. They went 1 goal down, a goal on set pieces that they conceded. And they just didn't play well. Sergio Ramos was back, played an hour, which was the plan. Then Eden Hazard.
Back 3, no less.
Yeah, and Eden Hazard came on as well for the last 15 minutes. But the saviour was Benzema again. How incredible. Where would they be without him? I mean,
I think what you also realize is without Modric and Kroos, who were rested ahead of Atalanta, so just a different side.
Yeah, completely. Bayern beat Werder Bremen 3-1. Robert Lewandowski scored 1, which makes he's on 32 for the season now, but somehow hits the woodwork 4 times. Gab, we don't often see this.
I don't think I've ever seen a player score
incredible.
Hit the woodwork 4 times in a single match.
Second half even, I think. It was only in the second half, wasn't it?
I'm just flabbergasted by what I saw. But this is a fun and easy win. Thomas Muller was excellent again. Yeah. Jerome Boateng actually put in a shift at the back next to your boy Lucas Hernandez.
Yes,
Lewandowski's crazy numbers. He's passed Klaus Fischer, the king of the overhead kick.
Yeah,
he's got 269 goals. Only Gerd Muller ahead of him. I don't think he's going to catch Muller.
365 is Muller.
He's 100 goals a season. Yeah,
he plays 3 more years. He's
33. That's Ronaldo territory. But I think he's got a great chance of beating the single season record because he needs 8 goals in the last 9 games.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain somehow lose at home to Nantes thanks to a Kylian Mbappe mistake. Bad pass. And some horrendous defending from people who should know better. Jules, they're 3 points back now, but this whole thing was kind of overshadowed by what happened to Angel Di Maria's family.
Completely, Gab. I've never seen anything like this before. We're in the second half, and at some point, Leonardo, the PSG sporting director, who's in the director's box at the Parc des Princes, sort of comes down to look down at where the bench is, and Pochettino calls Pochettino, who walks over to him. So you've got like a Romeo and Julieta sort of balcony conversation. And we don't know what's happening, and we think, like, what? Is he telling him what to do tactically, who to come? And turn out that it was just informing Pochettino that there's been a burglary at Di Maria's house while his wife and children were there, and that Di Maria had to come off, basically to rush home to be with his family, who were completely under shock. So Pochettino took Di Maria off, who you could see on his face had no idea what was going on, and who left crying the Parc des Princes to rush home to his house in his flat in Neuilly, which is nearby the Parc des Princes. Crazy things. At the same time, Marquinhos' dad, who lives in a house in Paris with Marquinhos' sister, was also burglared, also held hostages, which is just an incredible evening for Paris with the defeat and with those incidents happening to their players.
Everybody's okay now.
Everybody's okay. I mean, shocked.
Because there were reports of a hostage situation.
Yeah, even. I mean, there were. Yeah, it's not really clear exactly how violent it was, what exactly happened, but certainly a lot of people shaken up.
Scary stuff.
Scary. Leeds United and Chelsea draw 0-0, and Christian Pulisic play wing back for his first start under Thomas Tuchel. Gab, 10 league games into the Tuchel era, they're still unbeaten. They concede far less goals, but they also score less.
Yeah, only one opponent has scored against them, Takumi Minamino. I mean, that's incredible. The other goal was a Rudiger own goal. And by the way, it wasn't one of those Rudiger deflected own goals under pressure. No. It was a stupid one where he put the ball against Sheffield United, where he put the ball past Mendy. It's weird. 0.2 goals a game conceded is just ridiculously low. The expected goals against are also ridiculously low. This is lower than any Tuchel team that we've ever seen.
Although PSG were really good at times defensively.
But even then, strong. The lowest, I looked at, I mean, the half season, the best defensive record he had at Paris Saint-Germain was that half season before he got fired. And they were still conceding goals at about three times the rate that Chelsea are conceding it now. And he's doing it with Rudiger, with Christensen, with Alonso, who hadn't played all season, coming in there. Azpilicueta, a rotating cast of wingbacks. I think just the approach is settle down in defense, have this big casting call audition up front. We saw Havertz at center forward once again. What'd you make of that?
I thought they did well going forward. They just lack efficiency. The problem with Havertz, I thought he played well in that sort of force number nine role, but every time his chances came on his right foot. And I guarantee you, if a couple of them had come on his left foot, so if he made the run on the left-hand side of the box, not on the right-hand side, he would have scored. But as we've said before, it's always easier to sort out your defence and make your defence solid than have a proper plan going forward.
Are we
going
to see this Pulisic as wing-back experiment again?
No, I'd be surprised.
I don't, because you have enough options there. I mean, you have Reece James, who can play the position. He's played Hudson-Odoi there if he needs to. I think Pulisic needs to find his role on the pitch. And it may be, you know, as part of a squad, because there's a ton of competition.
Yeah, definitely.
Atletico Madrid are held to a 0-0 draw by Getafe, and the lead at the top is down to just 4 points if Barcelona beat Huesca on Monday night. Jules, it's always tough against Javier Bordalas, kind of like the off-brand Getafe weirdo dark negative caricature of Turismo 1.0.
Although they had the chances to win it, they could have won it late. It was really good performance for Soria in goal, I thought, and Moussa Dembélé, by the way, who I thought made a good entrance. He was available. He should have been more clinical. I think Atleti as a whole should have been more clinical. And it's 2 points lost when Real Madrid won, when Barca will play. And when you thought after their win midweek that was so important against Bilbao, that okay, now they're quite in control. Well, maybe not.
You kind of always feel that they were more likely to drop points against a team like Getafe.
Yeah, completely. Borussia Dortmund beat Hertha Berlin 2-0. Erling Haaland doesn't score, Gab. And they're just 2 points from the top four. Is that in Terzic, ET, turning things around? Certainly more. It's been better.
So if you didn't watch the game and you just saw the goals, you'd be like, oh, they got lucky, because you got Moukoko, the 16-year-old wunderkind, scoring in garbage time in like the fourth minute.
Brandt,
and the opening goal.
Long range try.
Yeah, Julian Brandt shoots from like the next zip code. But
which he never does.
Yeah, but it's a terrible shot. Rune Jahrstein, I don't know, he gets like spaghetti arms. I'm sorry, Jan, if you're watching. I'm sure he's your mate. But, you know, it's not good.
Outside
of that, they played really, really well. I'll tell you who turned in a remarkable man of the match performance again, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Your boy, Jude Bellingham.
Yeah, incredible.
Leicester City stay third as Kelechi Iheanacho's hat trick powers them past Sheffield United. Jules, he's on fire.
Mm.
But it's sad to see Chris Wilder leave.
It is sad. I think for the 5 years that he's been at the club, he took the club from League One and really near the bottom of League One to the Premier League. At this stage last season, they were competing for European places, which was pretty incredible how they overachieved. There was clearly a lot of arguments with the ownership, with what they wanted to do next season in the Championship, because, of course, they're going to go down. And I maybe didn't feel like this job was for him anymore. Okay, which is really sad.
Some love from Leicester here. Come on.
Yeah, and bro, you asked me two questions. I answered one, and now I'm answering the other one. Iheanacho on fire. I mean, I know where Son and Kane were on Sunday. They were not the Emirates. They were the King Power, because you know, the assist from Vardy for Iheanacho. Lovely interview post-match as well from Iheanacho. Really lovely words that he picked. It's great to see them like this. And clinging on to that top four finish, which would be amazing, especially with the injuries that they're having right now. Youssef El-Nizri gives Sevilla a win in the derby over Betis in El Gran Derby, as you call it, Gab. How big is this for Lopetegui? Because they were really in a bad patch.
I think it's really big because it was a bad patch, because when you play Betis, they have so much individual talent that, you know, I know they're incredibly inconsistent, but anything can happen.
Yeah.
And of course, it came after, you know, that crazy ending in the Dortmund game, where, you know, Lopetegui was angry and all sorts of things could have happened. So I think it's a huge call for them, and it just cements them, I think, in the top four. I think it's 5 points over La Real right now. Leipzig slipped 4 points behind Bayern as they dominate, but it held 1-1 by Eintracht Frankfurt. Jules, is it time for us to get off the Nagelsmann bandwagon with 7 games to go?
No, it's not.
We
still believe they will play Bayern, and they can win that as well, of course. But you just cannot drop points like this. Frankfurt are a really good team. They played really well. I thought Kamada scored after Poulsen.
But Leipzig deserves to win.
Yeah, Leipzig deserve to win. They lost Dayot Upamecano, though, in the first half to what looked like a muscular hamstring injury, which is bad news. But
I think the difference
that's
is
why
that...
That's why you win titles, Gab.
Yeah.
It's in those games that against good team, a team that is fourth in the table, that you have to win, that you should win, that you deserve to win, and you just drop 2 points because you're just not enough clinical in both boxes.
Yeah, I think when Bayern outplay the opposition, they win. When Leipzig outplay the opposition,
exactly.
They don't always win.
Exactly. Staying in Germany, Sport 1 are reporting that the German FA are confident that Hansi Flick will leave Bayern Munich to join the national team and take over Jogi Löw after the Euros. Are they right to be so bullish? Why would they leave Bayern Munich?
Honestly, if I were Hansi Flick, I'd be very tempted to go. So look, obviously,
Why? Well,
he was with the national team for many years, so it's an environment that he knows. He's already won the treble. He's won everything there is to win at Bayern Munich.
But you can win another treble. Who's won 2 trebles in a row? No one.
Yeah, but no, but this could be after the Euros, so he could win another treble this year.
But what I mean is, like, you keep going.
I just think he looks at the situation, or I think this is what the German FA, if this report is correct, he would look at the situation and he would say, all right, we need to do a bit of a rebuild here, because Lewandowski is going to be 33, Müller's going to be 32. Those are critical players.
Yeah.
I still don't know if I'm ever going to get what I want from Leroy Sané. Alaba's going to be gone. Boateng's going to be gone. Do I want to deal with the rebuild when managers before me, the last two managers before me, won the league and got unceremoniously fired in mid-season? Maybe if we win the league again, if we win the Champions League, why not go back to the German national team?
Maybe. You've
got a chance to win the World Cup.
You've actually convinced me. You have convinced me.
Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez will both miss the Euros. Jules, is this a bigger loss for Holland or for England?
For Holland, I think not having van Dijk...
Because he's a better player.
Because he's a better player. And because he's probably even more important to them than Joe Gomez, who is a very good player, who probably could start for England at the Euros, is to England. So...
They're both losses for both teams, of course. The one wrinkle, though, is that if you're Holland, you can play to Frey and
De Ligt. Yeah, no,
and you still have an outstanding defensive partnership.
Yeah,
probably a better defensive partnership than anything England put out there.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, no, no, definitely.
And if I'm Joe Gomez, I just kind of forces you into that Maguire...
Stones. I mean, yeah, but arguably right now, Maguire and Stones could potentially be very good together.
Yeah, but Pep's not coaching England, so...
Yeah, true. That's a good point. That's a good point. Boca Juniors and River Plate draw 1-1 in Argentina. Not surprisingly, Gab, there was one red card for each team, as they do when they face each other. But what was surprising, though, what happened at the very end of the game?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you to describe this. I'm just going to tell you, go to YouTube, go see this. It's one of the weirdest things that you will ever see. I think, legitimately, it was a supernatural Diego... from on high,
yeah.
Somehow willing the ball. The near misses, the ball slices, taking a bounce that clearly defies all laws of physics. Now, I'm sure, look, if you're a physicist or whatever, if you want to go and explain the spin,
there's maybe a rotation of
the Earth, I'm sure there's an explanation. But this was seriously one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
A number of Norwegian clubs have voted to ask the Norwegian FA to boycott the 2022 World Cup in Qatar over human rights violations. Jules, is this a big deal?
I think it is, Gab, because maybe other federations, leagues, clubs could follow. And also because Norway have Erling Haaland to start with, but also Martin Odegaard and a very good young generation coming through. They could be a really good team in 2022 if they qualify for that World Cup. I think they will go, to be honest with you. I like what the clubs are doing, and you raise the questions, and it's a good thing to do. I still think they will go there.
It's a bit disingenuous, though, if you're the club, because you're not the one who's going to be making the decision. You can come out and say, oh, yeah, we're not going to... Well, Rosenborg, you're not going to...
That's a good question to raise, though, I think.
Oh, it's definitely a question worth asking. It's received scrutiny. I don't think the issue should go away. But equally, you can get all the clubs in the world... But unless they're saying, and we're prepared to vote out the heads of RFA if they don't do as we say, it's not going to happen.
That's true. Dusan Vlahovic scores a hat-trick for Fiorentina when they beat Benevento 4-1 on Saturday. Gab, he's 21. And a lot of people are getting really excited by that talent.
Yeah, because...
He's so good.
He's big.
He's really big.
He's a big dude.
Big dude.
He's got plenty of stones.
Yeah.
And, he's in double figures this year. This is his third season as a striker on a not very good team. On a team that struggles, up and down. Yeah. So, he's built up the personality. And technically on the ball, he's very gifted.
Very good.
So, I'm not going to say he's ready to make the big jump because I have a number of friends or Fiorentina fans who will rip my head off if I say that. Yeah. But if you get the pieces around him, he can make Fiorentina great again.
Yeah.
Wolfsburg beat up poor old Schalke 5-0, and Wout Weghorst scores again. Jules, this is what I don't understand about this guy, right? He had 17 goals last year. Yeah. He had 16 goals a year before that. He's already at 16 this season, so he's going to score more, right?
Yeah.
He's in the prime of his career, 26 years old. Why does he only have 4 caps for Holland?
Because they've got a lot of forwards, but... This is my question for you. You're in love with Bas Dost, who, by the way, had Bas Dost not being there, maybe Woot would have more.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to go and play.
Are you going to switch
Dost.
Your love now for Woot?
No.
Because Bas Dost is like, come on, let's be honest. It's Bas Dost's best.
Yeah, Dost's best. I like what you did there. No, look.
Woot is great. I mean, Schalke were terrible and Mustafi scored a great header in his own net. But I love Woot.
But is it weird? I mean, I was giving you a layup so you could go and criticize Koeman again.
Oh, yeah.
Because...
But this is not a kind of striker
who's on the Dutch national... Who are all these great strikers that Holland have had in the last couple of years?
And Daniel Malen and Bas Dost, who's recently been in the squad.
And a couple of De Jongs,
you're right, but maybe...
He has 4... caps. Four he's 26 caps. Years old. And before he went to Wolfsburg, he scored a ton of goals in Holland as well.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it could be the surprise for the Euros.
Maybe.
The Joan Laporta era doesn't get off to a great start, Gab, as somebody named Jaume Giro, who was supposed to be his financial guru in this new setup at the club now that he won the elections, announces that he won't be joining the board. Is that a big deal?
Unless you're thoroughly immersed in Barcelona financial nerddom and politics, it's really hard to judge. And I'm not. But I do know what they're saying. And during the campaign, this guy, who's apparently very respected and whatever, he was supposed to be in there, and he had a plan to sort out Barcelona's finances, which, as you know, they've got more than $1 billion of debts. Now, and he had committed, you know, he was going to be part of it.
Yeah.
Now the fact that he's not, that makes me think, uh-oh, you know, you need to tell us why. Is it because you don't think Laporta's credible? You have a problem with it? So, yeah, I think in that sense, it is a big deal. It's a big deal whenever, you know, a leader announces a plan and then all of a sudden says, uh-oh, this guy is going to be part of my team. You know, he's no longer here.
Yeah, definitely.
A referee named Denis da Silva Ribeiro Serafim has been banned for 6 months for urinating on the pitch just before kickoff in a Brazilian Cup game. You ever seen anything like it?
Never. Certainly not from referee. We've seen a couple of incidents with players during matches, not even before matches.
This is so gross.
This is before so disgusting.
He adjusts his shorts to make sure he's got the direction.
I watched the video.
It trickles down his leg. It's right next to the match ball.
Oh, my God. I should
not have. You're the referee. Run off the pitch.
I swear to you, he wanted to get banned. He's had enough of refereeing. He said, like, you know what? Let me find a way of getting banned. And he did it. But it's just crazy.
You can probably find it on YouTube, but I recommend you don't.
Oh, my God. Staying in Brazil, Gabigol was arrested after being caught by police in an illegal casino. Gab, he tried to hide under the table.
Honestly, you know how we had used to have our COVIDiot segment? Yeah? I think this might trump everything, you know. Dude, after you became a running joke in Europe, you relaunched your career
at Flamengo.
You did really well, back with the Brazilian national team, sort of. And you go to an illegal casino with 200 other people. And when you come in, you decide to hide under a table, thinking, what, they're not going to find you? They won't recognize you?
Who is this dude? Nah,
listen. Come on, man. Come on.
It's God.
All right, that's all we got time for. But we're going to be back on Thursdays. Isn't that right, Jules?
Yeah, Champions League week.
Big Champions League week. Upsets in the air, maybe.
Maybe.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.